This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Man, a good afternoon to you too, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, doing all right. We're, man, it's a beautiful season over here in central Mississippi in the dirty South. If most people are going to be stuck at home, I'll be honest, like, this is the kind of time you want to be stuck at home. I don't know about where you're at, but it's been beautiful here. I mean, it just really, really pretty. Like, real crisp air, not too hot, not too humid, just warm enough to make it pleasant outside throughout the neighborhood here. Lots of, you know, mamas with their strollers, you know, hanging out with the kids on the street, all that kind of stuff. We went lunting the other day with the baby, and man, it was just so nice, man, just around the neighborhood here. So, you know, we can take some comfort in the fact that at least around these parts, it's been really pretty.
Yeah, man. I know what you mean. It's been nice here. Although I will say, I've been trying to like will it to be summer. You know what I mean? Like I have been enjoying this. I mean, you know, the flowers are in bloom. We've got, at the new house, we've got kind of a rose garden in the back, which is real nice. And,
oh, that's great.
Hibiscus and some jasmine and just all kinds. I mean, it's beautiful because you just go out there and it smells amazing. And I'm trying so hard this season to really like fight the allergies so I can like fully enjoy the beauty that we got going on, man. And it's a great place to sit out, smoke the pipe, and enjoy the weather. And yeah, so I mean, all things considered, you couldn't ask for better quarantine weather.
I know,
but I
know.
Do wish it was a bit warmer. I'm just like I said, I'm just trying to will it.
Well,
will it to be summer.
I guess you've been in Houston for a couple of years now, so you just wait. You just remember remember this moment right now where you are wishing for it to be warmer. About mid-August, that's when you'll start eating those words.
No, you're right. It's highly selfish. Like, I get it. It's highly selfish. The reason why I want it is because of the pool. Because, like, that's the thing. I mean, I've said before, like, I love living in Houston, but if we didn't have this pool, I don't know if I'd love living in Houston.
You know, it's funny. Growing up down there, I remember thinking to myself, like, this is fun. Like, I'd go visit. My grandfather would take me to my aunt's pool, and we'd hang out and ride bikes and all this stuff. And I'd think to myself, that, you know, this is fun, but humans probably shouldn't live here permanently. It's just so hot, man. It's just incredible.
It's just
all the concrete and everything. It's just, oh, man, it's impressive. So, yeah. No, that's good, man.
I am curious. So, have you been going back and forth with the shop, or how have y'all been doing, all things considered?
Yeah. So this, we were deemed essential by our local authorities, but in order just to protect our staff and everything. So I have sent everybody home except for, myself. And then we, Liz, who is a dear friend of mine who works for us at the Squire, who kind of quarterbacks all of our mail orders, she has volunteered. I offered to, you know, take it myself and all that kind of stuff, but she has volunteered to continue to crank out mail orders, and so that's been incredibly gracious of her. And frankly, as a retailer, it's helped us get through a little bit with all this madness going on. A lot of folks are at home and, you know, trying to figure out what to do. And, so they occasionally are, you know, buying a little pipe tobacco, and we're thankful for that. Our biggest concern, to be honest with you, Bo, is, you know, I'm a pretty conservative retailer, so I'm pretty good at, you know, stashing away a little bit for rainy days. And so I wasn't as concerned about that. But my biggest concern, you know, as far as, the business environment, has been taking care of our regular customers that have been shopping with us for 50 years. You know, I mean, I've got 85-year-old Korean War veterans that smoke a half pound of Cherokee a week. Like, I'm not going to let them go without pipe tobacco. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to let it happen, you know? And so it's been this really strange balance of, we have shortened our hours at the shop and limited the amount of people that can come in and hang out and all that kind of stuff. But we're kind of, you know, just carrying on, trying to make sure that our clients are taken care of. You know, the elderly folks that are in our area, we've done direct mail to them, even though they live basically down the street, and, you know, are encouraging curbside pickup and all that kind of stuff. And so, It's been interesting. Yeah, it's been really, really wild. But, you know, we've just got this whole fleet of customers that, you know, are literally in their, you know, 70s and 80s, a couple in their 90s still. And they're our regular. I mean, once a week we see these guys, and I'm not going to let them go without pipe tobacco. I'm just not going to do it. If I, you know, if they came and and if they hadn't have, you know, deemed us as essential or whatever, we would be delivering this stuff to people's doors in those Intel suits, you know. So I don't know, but
yeah, man, that's something I've been, you know, it's been on my mind, because they talk about like the second surge and the likelihood of that coming specifically from, like, you know, gyms, massage parlors, or you know, places where people will kind of congregate. And you know, it's one of those things that I constantly think of, the fact that, like, you know, obviously the Squire, you've got a very diverse, I was about to say audience, but customer base in terms of age-wise. And, you know, you could see college students hanging out with, you know, folks planning their retirement. You know what I mean? Like, there's a massive, you know, there's a massive kind of communal hub that is the pipe shop, especially amongst kind of some of the elderly as well. So it's good, man. You're taking care of your folks. You're making sure that they're getting their needs, and also, you know, taking care of making sure they're protected as they're getting their needs as well.
Which... Yeah, and taking care of our staff as well, you know, making sure that, you know, everyone is, you know, not thrust into a, you know, situation where they're going to be compromised or any of that kind of stuff. So we're, you know, it's so funny to me. We are going through this season, and none of us really know what to do, right? I mean, you know, unless you're the immunologist guy that gets up on the, you know, for the White House conference every day, that, you know, has been studying these infectious diseases for, I forget his name, but for
Fauci.
That one, yeah. Yeah,
the one with, you know, with the F that sounds like pasta, yeah. And now we've lost our Italian, right?
All our Italian listeners, right? Again. You know, yeah. The few we got back. If you had, you know, that level of expertise, you could, in your mind, kind of rationalize this out every day. But, you know, with us normies that are out here, you know, we just have so much conflicting stuff. You know, it's like, well, wash your hands. Well, you know, if you wash your hands, you don't need to be touching your mask, or, you know, I don't know, just back and forth constantly. So we do the best we can, and we hope that it's good enough, and we just kind of muddle through it, knowing that or hoping that our, you know, imperfect measures that we're taking are going to make a difference and flatten this joker out. So regardless, I think we're all, you know, getting a little stir crazy and ready to get back after it. But
man,
I know the pipe has been a soothing balm to so many folks stuck at home. I have had many people tell me just, you know, the amount of tobacco they've consumed since they've been on, you know, furlough, you know, sequestering at home, has just gone through the roof, right? So I don't know, man. This is interesting times. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, everybody be healthy and take care of one another. Take care of yourself. And taking care of yourself is taking care of one another at this stage in the game. But I will say this, man, speaking of, you know, kind of everybody going a little stir crazy, looking for ways to connect. After we did our you know, first club hangout, man, I got some great advice from Jim Friedman, who was he was on the call, and he mentioned that, you know, the folks over at this Pipe Life have been having their kind of get-togethers virtually, and so he invited me to join one of them a few weeks back, where Brian Levine was actually the guest. So apparently, what they do is they have like a speaker who kind of come on and you know, gives like a presentation, talks about some stuff, and then, you know, they kind of, you know, ask some questions and that sort of thing. Cause I mean, I'm telling you, man, you weren't there, but when I ran our first one, it was a mess. It was a beautiful mess, but it was a mess. Cause, like, you know, you had so many great people who were all on and nobody knows when to talk or how to talk. And it's like, oh wait, we have to facilitate this. Like, it's like almost kind of a round table discussion. And I didn't quite figure that out until like the last like 5-10 minutes. And so it was just,
kind of the country squire mess you've grown to know and love, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In real time. It's amazing.
Right. But, you get to be a part.
The format that Jim laid out, I thought was really great. And so he invited me to be on, and, you know, unfortunately I kind of lost track of time in the midst of everything. I was watching, of all things, I was watching Little Mermaid 2, the direct to DVD sequel of the Little Mermaid movie that my kids have been trying to get me to watch forever. And I've got so much to say about that, but I am not going to go into that here. But the great thing is, man, so I get a message from Brian Levine who apparently had been tipped off that I was supposed to come in and just, you know, haze him from the back of the class and throw spitballs as he's trying to talk and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm able to jump on like as soon as the movie ends. And I go on, great guys on there. We had a great time, fun time talking. And of course, me and Brian, you know, we here at Country Squire Radio are huge fans of Brian Levine and of the Pikes Magazine radio show. But man, we were having a little fun back and forth. But I thought this is so great because if I'm just like stepping off of watching this just terrible movie of the direct to DVD Disney sequel that was The Little Mermaid 2, who better to jump in with than Brian Levine, the king of pipe tobacco, as well as the king of like everything Disney, like the most minute Disney, whatever it is out there, Brian is an expert in. And so, yeah, I'll have to share more. I'll put it this way, John David, as I'm watching this movie, trying to figure out why it's so terrible. I IMDb it. And what I learn, I can't even discuss on our show here. it crosses the red lines.
That's amazing. Wow. That's incredible. And you get to off ramp that with Brian Levine and a bunch of pipe smokers. So.
Well, exactly. There I went past the red line. Cause I was like, Brian Levine, explain this to me, because I just went to the IMDb page of this movie and I was wondering why this film was trying to get to the climax so fast. And now I figured out why, because the people who created this, but anyway, I'm not going to go into it here. Anyway,
moving along. I'm glad y'all had a good visit, man. It sounds like that was a fun time.
Absolutely. This Pipe Life Virtual Pipe Club and the good folks there. And big shout out to Jim as well, who's a member of our Pipe Club, the Country Squire Radio Pipe Club, and has been doing some great stuff. All right. So, man, we have got a fun show for today. Man, we're going back to the roots, if you will. And I'm not talking about the roots of Briar, which would have made a lot of sense. Now we're doing a tobacco centric episode, a tobacco talk, if you will. Now this is really kind of the truest form of what you would expect from a pipe tobacco podcast. The reviewing and deep dive, talking about the various tendrils and talons. Are those words of pipe tobacco?
They are. I don't know if they've ever been used for pipe tobacco related things, but they have now. So congrats.
Well, that's what we do. We find things that have never been used with pipe tobacco and we use them.
That is true.
So what we got today, because typically what we do is we've got a 10 and a blend. At least that's the way it was in the early days. Since then, we've gone all over the map. Sometimes it's, you know, a bunch of loose. Sometimes it's a bunch of tens. I'm excited to see what you got for us, John David.
Yeah, we've got a couple of 10 tobaccos today, and excited about this because there are a couple of really good ones, and I'm hoping our Virginia lovers and Kentucky lovers will be pleased with this today. Yeah, got a couple we'd like to talk about. The first one, it really interesting tobacco that came out last year as a limited edition. They released a good bit of it. It was a one-time release. They released a good bit of it, and now, but not all of it, and now are releasing the last batch of it. And this tobacco is from our friend Eric Stokeby, fourth generation. It's small batch aged Virginia, produced by Samuel Gaywith. Really, really interesting tobacco. So you've got kind of a mouthful here. It's the fourth generation small batch aged Virginia tobacco. And just a really interesting collab here. What they've done is Eric Stokeby, of course, part of the Stokeby, you know, royalty family that we know and love, and is immediately recognizable in the pipe community, pipe maker, and
the current patriarch, I should say, right?
That's correct. Yeah, that's right. And our friend Max's dad, you know. And so Eric, you know, is just really talented, and got together with the folks at Sam Gaywith to produce a aged premium Virginia that was a, you know, is a special edition product, something that they wanted to really stand out and to say, hey, that remember that time they did this one-off thing and they sat on a bunch of real premium bright leaf for years and made this special concoction and boy, wasn't it good. Well, they did that. They conquered it, and it came out really as a fascinating product. And so yeah, just kind of interesting. So you're starting to see a little bit more of it trickle out now. Again, they released a lot of it in 2019. The remnants of it are kind of coming out now, and as far as I know, that'll be it that is out. But
yeah, based on like just a quick glance at this, I mean, this is I have not seen this yet anywhere.
Yeah. It was limited. It was kind of hard to get. And so, you know, hopefully if you are a Virginia lover, keep a lookout for it here in the coming days. Straight Virginia, it's kind of a ready rubbed tobacco. And, you know, and it's packaged in a way, that, you know, is very unique for the manufacturer. Now, again, this is made by Samuel Gaywith Tobaccos in the north of England there. Some of the hardest to find tobaccos, you know, in the world. You know, Sam Gaywith Tobaccos have become very hard to get, and, you know, they have this following where they get gobbled up. Not quite as bad as the Esoterica tobaccos, but it's getting pretty close to that, you know, because they're just hard to find. And so when Sam Gaywith collabed with Eric Stokeby, they, you know, wanted to do something in their own right, unique and different. And so the quality of the leaf that you would expect is there from them. But the presentation is very different. When you open this package up, it's actually a small black lacquered box. And it says fourth generation Eric Stokeby and small batched aged Virginia on there. Just a beautiful small box. You can note a little brass hinge on the end of it. It's about the size of a little, maybe a largish, like a ring. You know, if you're opening your engagement ring for your, you know, a fiance or whatever, kind of a box about that big, maybe a little bigger. That's kind of, if you can imagine that in your mind, that's kind of what you're looking at. So you open this lacquered box. It's real beautiful and elegant. You know, it's something special that you're getting into here by opening this. And it reveals that the box is actually a small humidor. Which is kind of neat. So it's cedar lined, Spanish cedar, inside the box. And, the presentation is really over the top. It is truly over the top. It's one of those where, you're like, wow, they've really kind of, you know, they're
spared no expense.
Yeah. You know, it's like you go to the gala that you've been invited to, you know, and you see the crazy ice sculpture that's there. You're like, okay, you know, they did that because they're trying to make a statement, right? And so Sam Gaywith has, you know, with Stokeby has done this here. So,
so I'm curious real quick about the presentation, because like it is, I mean, it's a beautiful box, and you definitely, like you say, it gives you that kind of standout, you know, this is something different. All right. You're supposed to, you're supposed to see this, and that is supposed to be what you feel. This is something different.
Yeah.
You mentioned it's a humidor, because that the biggest question I had the first moment I laid eyes on this thing is how does it preserve the pipe tobacco inside? Like, is it prepackaged inside the box in some sort of airtight seal that theoretically you would kind of bust open and pour back into the box, or what? What's the process here?
Oh man, I love where your mind's going, because this is exactly where the whole story of this particular tobacco pivots. Now, I want to preface my review and you know, discussion of this tobacco with I do like it. I think they did a great job with the tobacco. It's tasty. The end product once you get there, is really good. But everything I've described up to this point has been beautiful, very pleasant as far as an experience. You open the box. Inside the box is this little foil wrapper, gold foil wrapper that's just very lightly sealed. And then you unfurl it, and there's this beautiful ready rubbed Golden Virginia in there. But Bo, you nailed it. You kind of tripped over the point of this, and that is
right.
the tobacco inside is bone dry.
Yeah.
and so it's kind of interesting to me that they chose this method in packaging this particular tobacco. I appreciate what they're trying to do. You appreciate the elevation of the experience and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, that's a big part of it. As someone that also sells cigars, we know that, well, you know, a lot of the folks that stumble on the cigars that they love did it because of the artwork, right? And the tin tobaccos, we talk about that, how iconic some of the, you know, artwork was for things like Throgmorton or Christmas Cheer, you know, all the incredible artwork done by the folks at Cornell and Deal. And, you know, it just this regal stuff that you see and so you understand the value in that, right? I mean, I don't want to discount that, but at the end of the day, this is about preserving, you know, and maintaining good pipe tobacco.
Right. Form and function.
And so I think this is where the function kind of goes off the rails a little bit. And frankly, I'm a little disappointed with Sam Gaywith here. It's interesting to me because man, what you know, what were they thinking? I guess I don't know. It was kind of interesting, but yeah, you open this this box that's not it's got a loose plastic seal on the box, but it's not it's one of those where it's not wholly sealed. It's just sealed enough to kind of keep it closed, kind of thing. And so you open that, you've got this black lacquered box, and then inside that you've got the tobacco kind of encased in this golden foil. It's all gorgeous. None of it's airtight. and so it presents a problem. Yeah. So, you know, they've put all this time into this tobacco, right? They've sat on this premium, you know, Virginia tobacco for years. It's been well matured and is just stunning. And they put all this effort into it and are really trying to make this premium experience. And then at the end of the day, you know, the end user, he's excited. He's paid $30 for his special tin of this, you know, this tobacco. And then the tobacco's dry, right? Well, you know, so what do you do with this, right? it's at this point, I think, where the form, you know, you mentioned form and function. The form kind of failed us with this. You know, we're impressed with the beauty of it. The execution of it, though, maybe has something to be desired. And so there's a way to get around this and ways to get around this. And folks have done different things. But this tobacco is very enjoyable. You just have to, this is just, you know, when you open up the can or the box, this is kind of where the process begins. So what I did, I took the tobacco and poked it into a small jelly jar, mason jar size, little ball jar, and I put a pouch moistener in there and just let it sit for a couple of weeks. Now, what other folks are doing, a pouch moistener, by the way, for those, you know, if you're a new pipe smoker listener, it's these little button-sized silver discs that have a little pumice stone in there that absorb water, and you can put distilled water on there, poke it in your pouch or you know, tobacco bag, tobacco jar, can, whatever, and it just kind of slowly emits moisture to you know, bring that tobacco up to a you know, pleasant moisture content. So I did that, poked it back for a couple weeks. What some folks have found is that this box that it comes in, this little treasure box humidor that the tobacco itself comes in, it is actually the perfect size. It's the perfect dimensions for a small Bovita pack. Bovita packs, as we've, I think, discussed before, Bo, seems like maybe some of the guys at the Briar Shop got you hooked up with these, but they're little cigar pouches. They're made for cigars, but you can use them for a lot of things, but they're little pouches of this kind of squishy substance that slowly emits moisture. And then over time, it's slowly emitting this moisture. And then once it kind of runs out of moisture, it gets crispy. You throw it away and put another one in there. But they make a small version of this Bovita pack that fits perfectly inside this small, you know, kind of pint-sized humidor that they've put this in. And so what some folks have done is they've figured that out, and they've put that Bovita pack in there with the aged Virginia tobacco and let that sit for a few weeks as well. So that's another option for you too. But yeah.
You know, those packs, you know, this is a brief little tangent that I need to kind of confess really quick. So I've got, cause you know, you also mentioned just, you know, the cigar aspect of things as well. And it was making me think, I've actually got a couple of cigars that I think I shared this with you. I was going through post move, and you know how, like, you know, you move and you get the house set up, and then, you know, like 2 years later, you finish moving by getting the stuff that's just, you know.
Yes.
You know how it is.
I definitely understand.
So I was going through a box, and I found, you know, all of these cigars that I'd kind of collected over time that were in a humidor, but the humidor was broken. And so, you know, a lot of these were bone dry. So I thought, I was like, well, you know, I got this pack from the Briar Shop. I wonder if I actually just throw this in a jar with these cigars, if it'll work. You know, just, I don't know, just a science experiment. I haven't cracked it open yet. I almost did actually this very weekend to try it out. They've been in there for, you know, I guess about 2 or 3 months at this point. Is that stupid?
No, it okay. sounds like
I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but it's what I'm trying.
It sounds like you nailed it, to be honest with you. Now, one thing you have to, you know, be aware of, you know, is the fact that you've got a product that is probably going to take a good bit of time before it gets ready.
Right. Like pipe tobacco went a lot faster than the cigar tobacco.
Yeah.
Right?
You're going to have to, I mean, that stuff's tightly rolled. And, you know, if you bring it up to peak moisture too fast, it's going to start splitting and cracking and all that kind of stuff. You know, this is something where you're going to have to take your time doing it. If you can invest that time, you know, you can get those cigars back to a smokable condition. They may not be as fresh. You know, some of the aroma has probably left the leaves, and it's just a, you know, nature of chemistry more than anything. But you know, they're going to be smokable, and we see this happen all the time. So yeah, airtight, you know, container, glass jar works good with a Bovita pack or two, and you know, depending on how many cigars sit on them a while, and you know, you'll be enjoying that in your hot tub with your you know, little tiki jar cocktail before too long here.
Okay, good, because that's good to know. I can't wait to give that a try. I'll report back. But I'm sorry, that was a tangent.
Report back. I mean, we've got some listeners that are cigar smokers, so they can maybe take advantage of your wisdom there. So the Bovita pack fits perfectly inside this little humidor box that they've provided you with for the fourth generation small batch aged Virginia. And so you're going to want to let that sit for a couple weeks. For goodness sakes, you just open the tobacco, smoke a bowl, try it like it is, you know, figure out that, okay, this is pretty... This needs some attention before you dive back into it. But I mean, it is worth smoking at least a half bowl of this stuff before you put it away for a couple weeks, just so you can kind of, you know, compare at least what it's out, you know, like right out of the box. Once it's got some time coming back, it kind of being rehydrated, this tobacco is it's great. It really is. So you've kind of, you know, you're excited about it. You're let down by the packaging, and then you get to power through, and then at the end you're rewarded with I think what they really intended, which was really delicious tobacco. So kind of funny. You have to fight for it, but it's really good. It's a flavorful aged, you know, it's a spicy tobacco. It's one that, you know, you'll get lots of those notes of what you would expect from a straight Virginia, that bright leaf, hay, you know, a little citrus, a dash of that kind of tang in the background, with maybe some notes of plum and the mulled fruit that you know, is so readily observable in the you know, matured leaf, kind of a nice medium bodied Virginia. And so you know, all that to say that so much of this particular tobacco, the discussion around it is going to you know, revolve around the packaging of it, which I think was kind of controversial. But you know, they at the end they did a great job making an excellent tobacco. It's something from Sam Gaywith, which, you know, you're going to know is just top of the market as far as quality goes. And, you know, it's a delicious, you know, aged Virginia that's got, you know, some enough simplicity to make it very approachable for any Virginia smoker any time of day. But, you know, enough complexity and, you know, nice nuanced flavors to keep it interesting. And so I think you'll enjoy it. Is it worth $30? I don't know, but maybe it's worth, you know, $20-$25.
Interesting. You know, I will say this, because I do wonder, like, you know, there's been so much discussion that we've seen and commentary that has come after many of our discussions recently on rehydrating tobacco.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like we did that episode maybe a month and a half ago, maybe longer than that. But we got so many just like different techniques offered back up. And a lot of folks, you know, saying very specifically, as I, you know, confess to throwing some of my dried pipe tobacco into the fire pit, you know, a lot of judgment, not in a negative way, just judgment like, oh, come on. Like you can breathe life into any tobacco, no matter how dry it is. Like there's a group within the pipe tobacco community that is very like, no, there are so many different techniques for this. You should never throw out dry tobacco, no matter how dry. You know, it's interesting to me, because like, I wonder if we've now kind of gotten to a place where like as a consumer base, we're becoming more comfortable with the notion of having to rehydrate on pipe tobacco. Maybe that was some of the assumption here. Cause I mean, like, we're not talking about inexperienced people. Like, it's not like they accidentally did this. You know what I mean? Like there had to have been a discussion about the impact of what this packaging would do to the actual product. And so I'm guessing that what came from that is like, okay, well, this is obviously a premium product that is geared, or this is a product that is geared towards a premium experience that would be tailored to somebody. You know, this is not going to be the first pipe tobacco that somebody picks up. This is going to be to somebody who's experienced.
The connoisseur.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, so they're going to know how to revive this. So I would bet that's the case.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I think that's fascinating. You know, and maybe also their intent was to get this to market very quickly so that people could very soon after manufacture kind of transition this into a different type of container or enjoy it quicker, something of that nature, you know. But you just don't know. But I think your point is valid, you know, that they certainly kind of knew what they were doing. Again, these are, you know, folks that have a sterling reputation in the pipe tobacco world. So so anyway, yeah, the fourth generation Eric Stokeby, small batch aged Virginia tobacco, and a beautiful product, requires a little extra effort, but but at the end is a great tobacco for the straightforward Virginia lover. Yeah. Man,
all right, so there you go. All right, so I'm curious. Man, you started us out here. Where are you going from here?
I know, right? It's like, well, gosh.
That's quite a first step.
Yeah. What do you do with that? Man, we're going to talk now about another tin tobacco. This one is becoming, it's a cult favorite, but is becoming more and more, the brand is a cult favorite, but it's becoming more and more of a sought after thing. And, you know, again, you've got these kind of boutique, very small batch names that are being produced in the tobacco world, and they kind of get discovered by a group or a few individuals. They develop these fanboys, and before you know it, the fanboys have kind of, you know, preached the gospel about these awesome tobaccos that they've heard about, and then before you know it, you can't find it anywhere because it's, you know, they are constantly running out of stock, right? And so because they are produced in kind of small batches. And so, today, the brand we're talking about, we've discussed briefly before, it's Robert McConnell, and it's Robert McConnell Scottish Flake. Robert McConnell Scottish Flake. So, man, what a fantastic, series of tobaccos here. Robert McConnell, again, you've got a very, not a lot of tins produced. This is all produced by Kohlhaas & Kopp in Germany. And they make, a lot of brands that we also are very familiar with, like Rattray's. But then, other tins, too, that have also developed kind of these small cult following statuses. Freiburg & Traeger, Astley's, Robert McConnell. You've got these tobaccos that they're producing that, are just kind of have a limited feel to them. I mean, they're not, very, these are not, massively produced tobaccos, but they've kind of, I don't know, they've just gotten popular and they're hard to get now. Even Rattray's, it's hard to find Rattray's now, which is kind of interesting. A tobacco that, has been available for so long, it's kind of, like a few years ago when Dunhill tobaccos, of all things, you just couldn't find anymore. And that was even before they started, announcing that they were going to go away and all this. You just couldn't find them. And so
that's wild. So you said Scottish Flake, right?
Yeah, it's the Scottish Flake. Yeah. From from Robert McConnell. So
because Robert McConnell offers several flake tobaccos.
He does. They do. Yeah, sure do. And this one's interesting. Now, they've got a kind of a Scottish series, I guess you'd call it. They've got their Scottish blend, a Scottish cake, and a Scottish flake. And to my knowledge, all these tobaccos are basically the same, but just in different forms. So the Scottish flake, we're talking about a Virginia Kentucky Perique flake. It's a delicious tobacco. It is really, really good. And so you kind of got that very simple, a traditional Victorian maybe, kind of design on the tin there, that little bit of furliness around the artwork, and very simple Scottish flake. It's very, not something that is trying to make a huge statement, but, something that communicates some class, that kind of thing. What do you think?
I don't disagree with you. I find it, what do you consider class in the pipe tobacco?
Well, I guess when I, maybe class is not the right word. It's understated, right? It's something understand that
yet. I know what you're trying to say. I mean, as soon as you said that, I'm like, that's not the word I would use, but I think that I agree with what you're trying to communicate here. And I think understated, that's
it's like, it doesn't have to speak for itself. Like it kind of,
no, it does speak for itself.
It does. Like, it's just not flashy. And it doesn't have to be.
It's gotta be good. Right? Because if everybody's smoking it, it ain't for the packaging. Like,
right.
it's very much like, hey, you like orange? Or, I mean, that's true of like all their brandings. Like, hey, you like yellow? Hey, you like whatever the color is? Like, here's an orange 10. Here's a yellow 10. You know, whatever it may be. And then they've got their logo, of course, which is, you know, I mean, it's got that.
Kind of someone's name, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of. And then you've got some of these, I mean, I guess the older ones are a little bit more ornate and decorative and kind of the you know, the border, so to speak, of the logo. But for the most part, it's just, you know, here's the color orange, Scottish Flake.
Right.
Enjoy.
Right. Exactly. And to be honest, on the tin, that's about all you get as far as the description goes. Now, it you know, it's funny. I have always, if you've listened to the show long enough, you've you know, probably are aware that I've always kind of done, mentioned or referred to a Scottish Flake as a Scottish tobacco as a tobacco that features, you know, a non-aromatic featuring, you know, a bit of Latakia, but the Latakia is kind of in the background behind Virginias and Orientals. So, you know, I've heard that in other places, other blenders use that kind of language. But then you've got something like the Scottish Blend from, you know, Mac Baron, which is an aromatic tobacco, but the way it's topped and the quality of tobaccos, you could really put it in any pipe. It's, you know, just very, very complex, very interesting. It doesn't really go with the description I use at all. And then you've got these tobaccos from Robert McConnell, the Scottish Flake, and their description of this is exclusive dark Virginia tobaccos and a spicy Kentucky with a touch of Perique pressed into a flake. Now, notice there wasn't any Latakia in there at all. And so, all this just goes to say, man, the pipe world is so full of like just... I mean, you just kind of create your own definitions, you know. Scottish tobaccos are definitely, I mean, Balkans are similar to that. You know, you've just got all these varied, you know, definitions of those words. And so, but anyway, they're Scottish Flake. They've got a dark Virginia, spicy Kentucky with a touch of Perique pressed into a flake. So when you open this orange tin, they used to be square tins. They come generally in round tins now, I think because of the future labeling that they're going to have to switch to, although some people do prefer the round tins. But when you open the tin, you've got this beautiful brown flake. It's a warm walnut-colored brown flake with these ribbons of gold that kind of run through it. It's just very, very supple. It's just got a beautiful moisture content to it, and I want to brag on it right after we follow this the other tin that we talked about because the moisture content is just exactly what you would want from a preserved flake tobacco. Folds and stuffs really easily. This is one of those where when you pick the flake up right from the can, I did not have to really let this tobacco dry out before I smoked it. It was one of those that went directly into the pipe pretty easily. And I don't fold and stuff my flake tobaccos very often. I typically kind of rub them apart. I think I've talked about that before on air. But, you know, folding and stuffing this particular tobacco went really well for me, but also, you know, runs, you know, burns great if you just kind of tear it apart and load your pipe with it in the traditional way. It is a very peppery tobacco on the light, which I really enjoyed. It's one of those where I didn't get the sense that the pepper was from the Perique. It just kind of felt like it was more of a nice, pleasant bite that you would get from, you know, say your favorite, you know, high quality bourbon or something. It just had a really nice, it kind of bite, probably more from the natural sweetness than anything of the tobaccos. And then what was so fascinating about this, you know, the second time I smoked it, this was a lot of fun to me. But after that pepper, I really noticed how the complex notes quickly started to develop and really brought me to places that Virginias and Kentuckys have never taken me before, which I thought was fascinating. Bright fruit, pear and grapefruit flavors. This kind of interesting citrusy, apple-y flavor that was, kind of present throughout the rest of the bowl once you kind of powered through that initial pepper. And then you still had the grassy, peppery flavors that you kind of expect from a high-quality, Virginia tobacco there, that was there, the smokiness of the Dark Fire Kentucky and the pepperiness of the Perique. It was just really, really pleasant. It was funny. I was sitting on the porch with my wife recently smoking this tobacco, and we had some white wine in the fridge. It was a Sauvignon Blanc, and Sauvignon Blancs, they kind of have that kind of light pear, grapefruit, citrusy, but not super sweet, a little bit dry. I was like, man, this would go great with that. And so I ran inside, had my pipe lit, got the bottle of wine, brought it out with the pipe, and really enjoyed that pairing. This is not a Squire Select episode, but that pairing that day was just really pretty special. It was really good. So first time I've really kind of honed in on a white wine as far as one to pair with a pipe tobacco. Kind of interesting, but
maybe teeing up a future.
You never know. But just a really good tobacco. Good hot weather tobacco. Something that has a nice medium to full flavor with a medium to full strength. And I think you'll enjoy it. This is something that a Kentucky lover will love for that smoky kind of campfire toasted flavor, and then also the Virginia smoker will like it as well. Perique is there. It's not super strong over the top, but it's present, and I think you'll enjoy it if you like a Virginia Perique.
All right. Well, there you go.
Yeah, man.
Man. Okay. So, I got to ask you something. I don't know if I've ever asked you this before. When you're kind of coming up with what will be the tobacco talk tobaccos, do you have a process? Like why in particular these two tobaccos, out of curiosity, for this particular week?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's tobaccos that I've smoked recently, this week, or, have smoked, in the recent future. In other times, it's been tobaccos that, folks have specifically asked me about. They've been like, hey, I just tried this, and these are my thoughts. What are your thoughts, kind of thing? And so I'll go try it. Or, maybe it's a tobacco where, it's new to the market and I want to review it for, the folks just to kind of have an idea of what it is. Or, folks have said, hey, I haven't tried this tobacco yet and I'm thinking about getting it. What do you think about it? And I realized, well, I haven't tried it either. there's a lot of tobaccos that just kind of fall through the cracks like that. Tobaccos that have been on the market forever that we still, you could smoke a different tobacco every single day and not touch them all in a lifetime, particularly, brands like Cornell and Deal that have, 88,000 tobaccos, there's just so many good ones to pick from. And so, inspired in different ways. These are just two tobaccos that, I'd kind of had experience with recently. So that was it. But yeah, there's a good chance, if you ask me one time about a certain, tin, or if a friend has gifted me a can of tobacco that I've tried and had some strong feelings on, that it might show up on one of these episodes.
Well, it goes into kind of what we talked about during the kind of best practices. But I mean, part of being a good tobacconist, a good shop owner, is being an eternal student and always expanding your palate, trying some new things, and not being afraid to when I guess say I don't know when they ask what you think, so that you can go out and educate yourself, make a note, and go through, man. And there are far fewer educated voices out there than that of John David Cole as he goes through and trying out various pipe tobaccos to inform us about them. And you too can expand your palate. You too could be the next John David Cole as you try these sampling all of these great pipe tobaccos. But to do that, you got to get a good quality smoke from a great pipe like Missouri Meerschaum.
That is right, man. The folks at Missouri Meerschaum have been cranking out high-quality smoking pipes for over 150 years now. And, man, you talk about being a student of the trade, being always willing to learn, always willing to push the envelope, receive feedback. And the folks at Missouri Meerschaum have that in spades. They're always coming out with fun new shapes and new finishes, which has been a lot of fun to follow in the past couple years, particularly as they've celebrated their 150th anniversary. Man, as this episode episode airs, so proud to announce that Missouri Meerschaum is back open. They're back, their factory's back open. They got people at work, man. They've taken precautions, you know, with the pandemic that's happening to make sure their staff is safe, their products are safe. Things are getting produced in a timely manner and getting out the door. And so, man, be sure to look for your favorite Missouri Meerschaum pipes out there. It's probably a good time right now, you know, if you've got a few extra bucks burning in your pocket, whether it's from Uncle Sam or not, you know, to maybe replenish that supply of pipes for that you have on hand for tasting, or pipes you have on hand for the guests that come over and hang out with you and smoke pipes. You know, we've talked about having those Missouri Meerschaums on hand to put in friends' hands, convert some new pipe smokers. Great options there, particularly pipes like the Patriot, the Legend, the Country Gentleman. These are pipes that, you know, have a timeless quality, a timeless aesthetic, and a lot of quality that'll last for a long time. So check them out, Missouri Meerschaum. You can go to corncobpipe.com to get it from the source themselves, or find it at your local tobacconist.
That's right. And we thank Missouri Meerschaum for sponsoring this show.
Pipe question of the week.
Pipe question of the week this week, coming in from Jeb T. This is what Jeb had to say. I feel like this may have been asked before, but it is possible for us non-tobacconists. But is it possible for us non-tobacconists to flavor our own tobacco? See, I have this particular brand of whiskey that I love, and I'm curious what it would look like or be like to smoke a pipe tobacco that carried that same flavor. I know this is the case with rum-cased pipe tobaccos, and doggone it, I want to try. In my head, I just need to soak the pipe tobacco in a jar of the whiskey and then sun dry it out. But I don't know Jack on any of this. You tell me, boys, am I insane or could this work? And that's coming from Jeb T.
Jeb T, you may be insane, but it also can work. man, I say go for it, man. This is something where you can have a lot of fun experimenting with this. And folks do, you know, you can be as simple as, you know, with your favorite liquor. I've seen folks soak a paper towel in, you know, their preferred liquor, stick it in a jar with that tobacco, and then just let it sit for a year. You know, it could be something as simple as that, all the way to, you know, producing your own topping, you know, for the tobacco that you're looking at. You know, maybe creating a simple syrup, adding one of your favorite beverages to that, you know, heating the tobacco up so that the tobacco will readily accept the flavoring, and then mixing all that together, letting it sit and dry out, and then enjoying it at your leisure. You know, there's just so many ways to do this. Some people literally just, you know, will put, we've talked about flavoring tobaccos before on the air. You know, some people will literally just put, you know, a liquor maybe in a spray bottle and kind of spritz their tobacco. The thing about that is, you know, the tobacco is not going to readily accept the flavoring as much if you do it that way. It's really going to take some time and some heat in order to get that tobacco, you know, kind of permeated with the flavors of your favorite liquor. So, you know, man, try it out. You know, like I said, the simple way. I have a lot of folks that'll just kind of, you know, soak a little piece of, you know, paper towel or a sponge or something in their favorite whiskey, poke that down in a jar full of their tobacco. But if you want to get more sophisticated at it, look up, you know, topping methods. You can actually create your own topping to put on tobacco. Now, you know, one thing you need to be aware of, if it's a tobacco that is already flavored with something, that tobacco is not going to take your topping very well. So, you know, you're probably, yeah, you it's kind of like trying to draw over another drawing kind of thing, if that makes sense, Bo. Like, you know, your best bet is to find like an unflavored Burley, unflavored Virginia, something that can, you know, accept this flavor a little more readily. But once you do that, you know, just have fun with it, man. Experiment, look up some recipes. They're out there. There's tons of YouTube videos where folks have, you know, created their own, you know, toppings for different tobaccos. And then, you know, maybe you get a big batch of this stuff and you throw half of it in a jar and just tuck it away. And then the other half you, you know, you press, put it in a noodle press, or put it in, you know, even just take a little bit and throw it between two heavy books, you know, that you never open, and just see if that changes it up some. Have fun with it, you know. But man, go for it. You may be insane, but I also think you can work. So
hang on. You said a noodle press?
Yeah. People like to do that, make little crumble cakes with it.
Just using a traditional, like, you know, fucini noodle press.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know you could do that.
That's a thing. Yeah.
All right. Well, now we know. All right. Well, there you go. Big thanks to Jeb T for sending that in. And hey, if you've got a pipe question of the week for us, be sure to send those in. show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire question.
That's right, man. All right. We've got a 90s edition here. I think this was from as well from Pastor Joda. As well as last week. I'm excited for this. You ready?
Okay, yeah, come on.
All right. Fresh Prince or Saved by the Bell?
Fresh Prince. I get the appeal of both. You know, we all like Zach Morris's, you know, bag phone and all that stuff, but I'm going to go with Fresh Prince.
All right, I got a confession to make, and I hate to do this as a child of the 90s. I never once watched Saved by the Bell. Never.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I understand. I mean, I'm not going to shame you for that. You know, one thing.
Thank you.
One thing about it, Saved by the Bell came out a little early for us. Like, it was kind of in the early 90s where we were kind of a little more aware of stuff like this in the mid to late 90s. You know what I mean? So I kind of caught up. But, you know, I'm not going to shame you for that. You're good.
So that, you know, the early versus late 90s, I almost feel like should be two separate decades because they are a lot happened in the 90s. There was some transition there.
It's kind of
But no, Fresh Prince was
the early 90s is 80s part B, you know, and then.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
all the way. But yeah. So, Fresh Prince for me as well. Gangster rap or alternative / grunge?
I'll go with alternative. You know, I'm probably in that camp. It seems like I used to listen to...
Did you
to,
dirty your hair and have the black mascara?
I didn't. You know, I did own one pair of JNCOs. I will admit to that. But, man, I'm trying to think. Yeah, I mean, I listened to... what was the name of that terrible band that came out with Silverchair and Linkin Park, and I don't know. I mean, I'll go with the alternative.
Look at this photograph.
No, that so. I didn't do that. Now,
okay. I think that was the 2000s anyway. Yeah, you know, I want to just reject this question outright for two reasons. One is that alternative and grunge are two separate. I feel like are two separate genres in and of themselves. And then also gangster rap. Are we talking East Coast? Are we talking West Coast? Are we talking early 90s? Are we talking late 90s? It's just they're too exactly. So it's a broad, very broad catch all. But this is the main reason why I reject the question. I wasn't allowed to listen to anything that wasn't contemporary Christian music. If we're talking about in the 90s, so
I love the contrast here, Bo, because literally one of my first albums was Master P Ghetto Dope.
Was it really?
So
I tell you that? I tell you that I met Master P?
No, that's awesome.
We vacationed together in Santorini.
Vacationed together, fantastic, man. That's great.
Do you remember? You remember when I went to? No, I'm serious. When we went to
when you to Italy, right?
Not Italy. Greece. When we went to Greece.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Have I not told you this story?
No, I guess I didn't realize that. I remember you going to Greece, but you hung out with Master P.
Oh man, this is he did not want to hang out with me, but no, there's a story here, but we don't have time for it. So remind me to tell you, maybe I'll share on.
Okay, fair. Episode. That's fair.
Yeah. We shared a place together. It was great. Okay. Next up, flannel or starter brand jacket?
I'll go with the starter jacket. Yeah. I was one of those kids.
Okay. I looked into now flannel, but back in the 90s, I probably would have wanted a starter brand jacket.
Yeah. I'm on the same page. Yep.
Yeah. Finally, video game, arcade, or fun park, which was, of course, you know, putt-putt, go-karts, bumper boots, that sort of thing.
Man. Yeah. I mean, as many video games I played as I played at home, out and about, I probably would have more enjoyed the putt-putt, go-karts, that kind of stuff. You know, your fun park kind of discovery zone type of, you know, thing. I'd probably be more in that realm. Yeah.
Yeah. In Jackson, we had the park, was what it was called.
Yeah.
And so you had Putt-Putt, but it did also have an arcade. Like I remember going in and playing the, remember that Jurassic Park game where you were in the Jeep and you'd go around, you had the handgun.
Yeah.
And you had to shoot all the dinosaurs.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was that was a fun game. But Putt-Putt, the go-kart, I kind of conclude them all together. If I could choose between the two, I'd go for that, which would also have some arcade elements kind of mixed in that, rather than a true arcade.
Yeah.
I think the only time that I've ever gone to like a place for the true arcade nature of something was actually in college. Me and a buddy of mine, we would go to a bowling alley near our college that had a small arcade, but in that small arcade was the X-Men, like the Uncanny X-Men arcade game. Like you would go and you'd choose like Nightcrawler, Wolverine. I think Colossus, who had like, he could electrocute his body for some reason, which was not the character's power in the comics, but it was in the video game. And it was like one of those, you know, you'd walk back and forth, kind of like the old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles style arcade game. And we would go in with like just a bunch of quarters and we would just like, you know, go on Saturday morning and play that game as college students. We were super cool. Anyway.
That's hilarious.
There you go. 90s edition. Quick fire question. Love those. Those are a lot of fun.
They're great. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Thanks, Pastor Joda. And hey, if you've got some quick fire questions for us, send them in. show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
All right, listener feedback. This one is coming in from, yes, Daniel Holloman. He says, hey guys, thanks for what y'all do. This is Daniel Holloman. I was one of the most recent Squire patrons, but you referred to me as Shiner. That is the first part of my email. I updated it, my Patreon account with my name and somehow didn't save it the first go round. Kind of new to all of this social media. What different ways can we interact with y'all through this Patreon account, or what's the best way that you prefer to be contacted? Man, that's a great question that Daniel asked. He actually asked through Patreon, so this is kind of like an affirmation that yes, we do see those coming through.
Yeah.
But also, I thought I might as well use this as an opportunity to share on the show. Honestly, I think from a club member standpoint, the Facebook group, Patreon, or just straight up email is a great way that kind of raises to the top. But I mean, Patreon and the Facebook group are kind of checked on a regular, skimmed through on a regular on my part, because I don't jump into the discussion too much in the group, but I do on the very rare occasions that I pop onto Facebook, that's typically one of my checklist items to go give it.
The best way to get me is countrysquire1970@gmail.com. I'm gonna tell you a not so dirty secret. Well, it is dirty, but it's not so much a secret. I can't stand Facebook Messenger. Like I don't really do Facebook Messenger. It's just something that is not really on my radar. Like I don't put that in the same category as like receiving a text message or any of that kind of stuff. So, if you want to get me, try me at countrysquire1970@gmail.com. That's probably the best way. Yep.
Tweeting me directly is a good way to get a hold. I tell people all the time, like I'll check Twitter more than I check text messages. So, I mean, a good way is just to send me a message on Twitter.
We're so different.
We are, but I will tell you where we are the same. I'm the same way on Facebook Messenger, man. Like messaging us on Facebook is the last way to get in touch with us, because like every maybe a quarter, if we're lucky, I'll check that to go through and I'll see like, oh, we had all these people send us these messages on Facebook Messenger, and I just feel awful about that. Yeah. But I mean, like at the same time, you've got so many different ways of communicating. I mean, I tell clients now when they talk about how best to communicate with their audience, if I could go back in time, I would say, pick a social media platform and then stick with it. Like, don't try to be, all things everywhere, all over the place and that sort of thing. Like, you got to kind of have to pick a lane and go for it. And if people aren't on it, if they want to communicate with you, they'll get on it, or they could just get you on email, because email is kind of the secondary for everybody. From a audience connection standpoint. But Patreon and the Facebook group are a good way, just as the group is good for just kind of communicating as a group. If you want to message us through Patreon, obviously that raises to the top pretty quick. And then just as you heard from us and independently, if you want to get a hold of John David, email's good. If you want to get a hold of me, shoot me a Twitter. But show@countrysquireradio.com, we check that every week, at least every week, typically more than that. But there you go. All right, Daniel. Also, man, we got SN from Dave Allen, also called the Doctor, as I call him, Dr. Allen. He's not a doctor. What did Dave have to say?
He says, Bo and John David, great job on showcasing the Canadian pipe shape in O Canada, a look at the Canadian pipe. Is that what you named it, O Canada?
Of course. I was going to call it O. That's awesome. I was going to put like some punctuation there and be like, O Canada? Or like, oh, Canada. Or, yeah, but I just left it at, oh, Canada.
That's awesome. He says, I must point out, though, that you missed some crucial Canadian stereotypes, like riding our Zambonis across rivers and lakes in the winter, our use of the word Chesterfield instead of couch, I don't get that one, or our winter toques, knit caps, not to mention Bob and Doug McKenzie. Now onto the real reason for the email, the smoking chair. I have had two smoking chairs, the current one that doubles as my office chair, and my absolute favorite, the basement recliner. This thing is so worn in and so comfortable, it's like slipping into a favorite smoking jacket while lighting your favorite pipe and blend. It has been and will be a great chair to sit in and contemplate the joys and trials of life for a long time. Guys, thanks for producing such a quality show. Looking forward to many more. And that's from our friend Dave Allen. Love Dave, man. Longtime friend and listener. Love hearing from him. And man, blessings to you up in Canada, good sir.
Okay, this, when he said like this, this has rejogged my memory from actually a conversation with the smoking chair. Chesterfield was what I was trying to think of when I was saying like with the indented leather.
Oh, yeah. We talked about that the other day. Yeah, Chesterfield. It's got the little buttons that kind of make the leather have the dimples in it.
Yeah. Maybe in Canada, they refer to that like Kleenex. You know how we call like all like tissue wipes Kleenex, even though they're not necessarily Kleenex brands. So maybe that's the whole deal is in Canada, they do Chesterfield for all couches, not just the Chesterfield style couch, perhaps. I'm not Canadian.
Could be.
I don't know. You know this. I'm not Canadian. But thank you, Dr. Allen. We appreciate that. Thanks for taking us to task there. Hey, speaking of which, we have so many great, there's so many additional emails that kind of came from the smoking chair. So I might throw those in a little bit. We had such a great response to that particular episode. In fact, it was after that episode went out when I actually went on with this Pipe Life Club, and everybody was kind of showing me their smoking chairs. And people were asking, like, "Hey, is that your is that your Adirondack that you're talking about?" And anyway, it's just so there may be one or two that we might slip in from time to time with the smoking chair, since there was such a great response there, man.
No, that was good. I love getting all the feedback and seeing people's kind of personal ecosystems, you know, where they're smoking their pipe. But
it is interesting.
Anyway, no, yeah. That's great. And Dave, we appreciate you writing in.
Absolutely. Hey, if you want to write into the show, please do. Show@CountrySquireRadio.com is the best place to do it. Also, we've made mention, of course, of our own Country Squire Radio Pipe Club. If you haven't considered joining yet, please do. Patreon.com/CountrySquireRadio is the place to do it. You get access to our Facebook group, our club lounge, if you will, from there. And also, you're helping make this show happen on a weekly basis, and we greatly appreciate those of you who are. You can also keep up with us throughout the week. I'm at The Real Bo York on Twitter.
I'm at John David Cole, or you can get us at the shop @_CountrySquire.
But of course, all that contact information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com. All right. Well, John David, this is a good one, man.
Dude, I had fun. Yeah, man, we talked a lot about, pipe tobacco and some packaging preferences and tasting notes and all kinds of stuff. It was good. I had a good time, man. So
I cannot wait to tell you the story of how Master P tried to kick us out of our Greek villa. That'll be so much fun. That's like a tee up for next week.
I am eager. Bring it.
All right, man. Let's go have a day.
See you, brother.